but from here the snow started coming, had been coming down, and things turned bitter cold. I do believe it was about minus 20, which to me is very cold. The only difference was that in Holland it didn't seem as though it had the bite that we get off the North Sea. Here, once again, we went into our routine of attack wherever the army required us to do so. And I just don't know at the moment whether Arnhem happened before Christmas or just after Christmas. But we did see the whole of the sky on this occasion filled with Dakotas towing the gliders away to our left towards Arnhem. And as we watched and saw what was going on, we just couldn't believe that all our aircraft was grounded. But the result was many casualties, unfortunately, and there were Tiger tanks in amongst our troops, but we had to wait and not allowed to fly, to my knowledge. Whether they did or not, I don't know. The next thing I'd like to mention here is after Christmas, in due course, New Year's Day came, and to me this was a day I shall never forget. We were in the hut when all hell let loose. On this morning, as we found out later, the German Air Force struck the whole of the continent and the Air Force bases from Holland through to France. The actual damage, I don't want to say. All I do know, having read a book which was being written since the war, it was total chaos for every aerodrome or landing strip on the continent. Many people being killed, service people, many pilots being killed, many aircraft being destroyed. On our squadron alone, we lost our flight sergeant and also one of the lads. Myself, I only just escaped death when a 20mm cannon shell exploded a matter of a foot away from me. At the time, I was directing people out of a hut which was used as a semi-service hut into hiding behind a brick wall. But how to explain it is very hard. What I do know is I survived, and that's all I can say. But the RAF regiment opened up around the surrounds, and I do believe they managed to actually destroy some aircraft. I've heard many tales since the war and read many stories after the war about it, and also the book I would recommend for anybody who wants it. Total of the airfields, Operation Bonderplatten, 1st of January 1945, the author being Norman Franks. Fully recommended by me to tell you what happened. after the raids on January the 1st, I was sent to the medical section to have a check on my hearing, as I was having trouble with it. The reason being, I later found out, was I had had my eardrum burst. This meant that I could no longer work on the aircraft. So I was sent away from the typhoons and all my friends before I was able to say cheerio to any of them. I finished up working away from the landing strip itself, building up jettison tanks. These was huge cylindrical tanks which were hung on either side underneath the wings, which extended the range of the typhoon. How effective they were, I don't know, but this is what I was doing. And the snow was then about 2 foot in depth in places, and the actual tanks were covered in snow, which meant it was a very cold job, which in turn I was pleased to get away from having to do it. I was posted away from the airfield down to the coast. Here we were to be held at Ostend until transport would be available back to England. To our amazement, Ostend was absolutely full in all the hotels on the front. The reason being was the condition of the sea. The waves were very large, and it was difficult for ships and tank landing craft to come into harbour. Unfortunately, the ship that I was told we would have been on is a free floating mine, which must have come adrift with the huge waves. It sank with all the people on board were lost, which to me was not very encouraging, to think that we would be sailing soon. In due course, we were told we would be sailing across about a week later in a tank landing craft. These are flat-bodied transporters with very little on in the way of comfort. The next morning we arrived at Tilbury. Here we were checked out to see if we had brought any illegal goods into the country, mainly money. Having checked my paybook against the money I had in my pockets, I was less through to proceed home, which I thought, but in turn I finished up from Tilbury to Bramcourt. Here we were on the Wellington medium bombers. They had radial engines which I had not worked on during my period up to then. My main job basically was running around doing the odd bits and bobs. So I was pleased when I was reposted again, this time to a place called Portreath. This is down in Cornwall, which was a far nicer place to be. The actual aerodrome was the furthest out towards the Atlantic, and here I once again started working with aircraft. Bramcote Aerodrome was parked right on the top of a hilltop with Redruth down in the valley. The runway was straight over the cliff edge, so whoever took off had the one chance, which meant they either flew or they dropped in the sea. Whilst I was there, no one did actually have this happened. The main reason at Portreath is what I worked out was they was fetching aircraft from all different areas, all different types, mosquitoes, Spitfires, and what have you. And these were being made into group to be flown out to the Far East, where the war was still going on with the Japanese. Here, it was very interesting. I enjoyed doing it, but one occasion whilst there was gale warnings was issued, which could be as high as 100 mile an hour. This was a new experience to me. All the aircraft that we had were double picketed. This meant cross screwed in wires into the ground with a rope tied underneath the wing, with two, one at either side, and the tail being lashed down as well. The next thing we was told was that each one of us would have to sit in the cockpit of a aircraft so as to control it in the high winds. I finished up in a Spitfire. As the wind gradually increased, so the propeller started turning round, and then I felt shaking in the aircraft itself, first on my feet and then in the joystick, and then I realised that the aircraft was actually flying in the wind. A very, very funny feeling, knowing that you were flying but stood still. Having sat there all night and all the other chaps doing the same thing, we were all very pleased that in the morning this wind did subside and things returned to normal. At this point, somebody asked, where was the CO's tiger moth? Everyone looked at one another and realised it wasn't there. It was found all in a crumpled heap away off the drome. This, to my knowledge, was the only casualty. Staying at Portreath was one of the most pleasantest things I had been in whilst in the forces. The countryside is absolutely beautiful, and the people was absolutely marvellous. Once again, into the pubs we went, and there enjoyed the talk of the locals. and here we made friends with many of the locals. On one occasion, we was asked if we'd like to volunteer to go and talk to some RAF pilots. When asked, I little realised these people actually turned out to be the pilots and air crews of the who had had accidents in flying. Having passed an afternoon with them, I could only but admire the guts of these people with half-bent figures, hands, faces and what have you. And I really did enjoy their company, and I'm sure they enjoyed ours. From there, I went up into the hills and admired the views of the Cornish coast. In due course, the war ceased in England, but the Far East War was still carrying on. And on many occasions, I went down into Redruth, which was the local large village. And as the aircraft ceased to go out so much, I then became a gardener at Portsmouth. Unfortunately, this didn't last that long. So I was posted again, this time to a place of the place was called Cosford. This was the second school of technical training. Here I went through all the old routine of training again. Having gone through all the training, I came out as a qualified fitter, which meant that I had far more responsibility for the aircraft engines than I had had before. It was a pleasant experience once again to see all the different types of aircraft and how they worked, and this time knowing more about them. When finishing the course, I passed out as a fully trained fitter. I was then posted on to a place called Merrifield onto 4242 squadron. These were York aircraft. Now the York aircraft had four engines, a very square bodied frame, and it was the latest transport type of aircraft. I was quite happy with the old Merlins. And what happened here was the people who had been on bomber aircraft during the war were now being retrained onto more like a civilian aircraft. These York aircraft was mainly for transporting goods and personnel.